Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of From Complex to Queens, Home Run Applesauce's minor league podcast. I'm Lucas Vlahos. This week I'm joined by Ken Lavin and Thomas Henderson. How's everyone doing?
Doing pretty good.
Good.
The weather is lovely. Actually, it's a little overcast now, but it was lovely during the day. Also, I imagine many people are happy with the way certain sporting events have developed today. I'm certainly happy about the Mets, not so much about some other things. And let's just leave it at that. Let's just leave it at that. I don't need to start an argument about various aspects of other sports. Got a decent amount of stuff to get through today, so let's move right into promote, extend, trade. Obviously, I don't know, maybe 2 hours ago, we're recording this Sunday around 7. Two or three hours ago, Mark Vientos hit a walk-off two-run homer to beat the Cardinals. Really nice, fun way to close out the weekend. Nice way to cap off what has been a bit of an annoying series. I don't know that the Mets necessarily played badly. They had one game that looked a little rough, and then Sonny Gray kind of controlled them for a couple innings. These things happen. But that made me think about some other... How do I phrase this without being insulting? The Mets have trotted up a number of shall we say, less than prime corner prospects over the past decade. And despite that, have a lot of them have had some nice moments. I guess it's two decades at this point. So here are the three I came up with. And we're going to promote, extend, trade these iconic first baseman home run moments. The first one that always jumps to my mind is Mike Jacobs hitting a home run in his first at bat. Then you have Ike Davis's three homer game in Arizona back in 2012. And then, because it just happened, let's throw in the Mark Vientos walk-off two-run bomb, because I think that's far and away the most significant thing he's done as a Met. So just in terms of emotional impact, cool factor, whatever you want it to be, promote, extend, trade those three homer moments for Mets first baseman.
That's a good one, because I feel like they're all really different. I remember Jacobs as a prospect because I was like going to a bunch of Cyclones games around that time. I remember him like catching in Brooklyn.
I forgot. Yeah, he was a catcher a lot of times.
And then they moved him. But like that was really fun. I feel like the Ike Davis stuff was like everyone kind of thought he was good at the time. Like he was
because he
like,
was.
Yeah, and then it just
worked until it didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. That's a tough one.
It was weird. So I'll admit, like, the Mike Jacobs one came to mind immediately for me. I don't know why, but it did. I had to think and, like, look into what is the most iconic Ike Davis homer, right? Like, he hit a walk-off against the Padres in 2010. There's a walk-off against the Astros in 2012. I know he hit 30 bombs that one year, but... And he had a walk-off grand slam against the Reds in 2014 before they traded him. But I just couldn't nail down something that really felt like a particularly iconic moment, and maybe that's just because those Mets teams were so bad.
Yeah, they were awful. Like, what's an iconic moment for a team that's so terrible?
Yeah. So I mean that.
A three-homer game. How many is that? How many times that happened in Mets history?
He was the ninth at the time, I believe. Since then, and at the time, no one had done it at home. He did it in Arizona. Since then, we had both Kirk Nieuwenhuis and Lucas Duda do it at home. We also had Jonas Cespedes do it in Colorado. So that would probably, I think that would bring the total count for the Mets up to 12.
Cano had one, right?
Did he have a three-homer game?
Yes, he did. I was there. I was at
that game. Okay, 13. I have no recollection of that.
I was at that game.
I want to say Lindor's had one.
A three-homer game?
Against the Yankees? Or was that a two-homer game?
I thought that was a two-homer game where he capped it off like with a big three-run homer.
Francisco Lindor's three-homer game, September 12th, 2021.
That's kind of crazy.
They've done it more than I thought.
It's kind of crazy that they went all these years to the point where I consistently remember Gary Cohen bring this up pretty frequently, that the Mets had a decent number of three-homer games and just had never had it happen at home until, of all people, Kirk Nieuwenhuis did it.
Yeah, and then the floodgates
have opened. That's one of my favorite recaps I've ever written. I'm like, Captain Kirk just went where no man has gone before. I'm like, that was pretty good.
That's perfect. Yeah.
But then they've done it. So Kirk does it, and then Duda does it, and I guess Lindor has done it now as well. I mean, in the span of 10 years, they got three after not having any in the previous 50. So we love baseball, folks. These sort of things happen. Anyway, I'm still trading the Ike Davis three-homer game in Arizona because...
Yeah, I agree.
Less, and I think I'd actually put the Mike Jacobs moment at the top of the list just because it was so... I don't know why it's seared into my brain so much, but it really is.
Probably because of nostalgia. Like,
yeah,
Mike, it's so long ago and Mike Jacobs was like a thing. Because he was like a thing people talked about then. Mm-hmm. And then he comes up and a home run in your first at bat is always super cool. Like,
yeah.
This Vientos moment, even if he doesn't do anything else for the rest of the year, we're going to be talking about it for the rest of the year. But like, because that's a legitimately cool moment for him also. But I don't know. It's not his first. We saw him a bunch last year. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think also there's a chance that nostalgia could paint this in another direction, that if Vientos ends up being good, then we're going to circle this as like the first Mets moment, which would be fun. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's a different thing. But
this is the moment that taught him to stop hitting the ball on the ground 60% of the time. Yeah. It's like, holy shit, if I lift the ball, I hit walk-off homers. Maybe I should do that more often.
You know, it's funny. Not to have Vientos post on the Peronix then trade, but this game is like a microcosm of like the good and bad, where he swung through multiple 88 mile per hour cutters down the middle, and then fucking muscled out a home run opposite field because he has legit
97 like, up at his face. Yeah,
and he muscles it out, but like those shitty cutters in the middle of the zone, he just whiffed right through, and I was like, oh my god. It's so funny, like that's just like if you want to show him as a prospect to someone, I would just
wasn't
put
that fastball out of the zone too? Like I'm pretty sure
it looked a little up,
very top.
It looked a little.
It was a good pitch. It was a good pitch.
Yeah,
it was, and it was a great piece of hitting by him. But also, he did other dumb stuff earlier in the game, and it's like, why can't you just do this all the time?
Yeah, I mean, I will admit I'm a touch concerned that this will force them to keep him on the roster for longer, but I'm hoping that is not the case and he goes back to AAA when Starling Marte returns on the bereavement list.
I just don't know if you could, like, who are you going to cut? Wendell, and then you literally don't have a backup second baseman or shortstop? Like,
yeah, who's backing up?
Like, at that point, there's just not enough. There's not enough players who play the infield.
Right.
I don't know if they can pull it off.
It's one thing to go, like, I think the Mets should very much go without an everyday backup shortstop because Lindor plays every game and you can play Jeff McNeil there for six innings if something happens. Yeah. But
it's second base for me. Like, you can't.
Yeah. You can't do that. It's that. Like Jeff McNeil needs time. Jeff McNeil is older. He's had injury issues. You kind of don't want him to see certain pitchers, I think. So. Yeah, you can't do that.
The only way you could do it, I think, is if you cut DJ Stewart. And
DJ Stewart makes more sense for the roster, I think.
I agree with you, but I think that's the only way that you can pull it off. If you cut Stewart, make McNeil the fifth outfielder, and you platoon Beatty and
I mean, Stewart's good enough that he deserves a major league job somewhere. Maybe you trade him for something if you want to get Vientos on the roster. I don't know. I wonder if that's being too cute by half. But
I also think this stuff works itself out. Like
Someone will get hurt. JD Martinez's back will flare up, and Jeff McNeil will pull a hammy, and blah blah blah. It'll be okay. Okay, so those are the random first baseman home runs. Let's go through our draft updates real quick. Michael Massey was really bad today. Two innings pitched, four runs allowed, walked three, struck out four, hit a batter. His ERA is now over four on the season. Swing and a miss on my part. Slade Caldwell had two big matchups, first against Fayetteville in Arkansas and then against Rogers High School. Obviously, none of us know anything about Arkansas high schools, but apparently Rogers won the West Division or something. I didn't take the time to figure out how their conferences are aligned. I couldn't be bothered. But a notable opponent, had two really good games, three singles in the first, two doubles in the second, and that was the one against Rogers, including one that was off the top of the right field wall down the line, which is both an impressive piece of hitting, but also kind of indicative of the, you know, somewhat limited power potential here. Like really yanked that ball down the line and it still didn't get out. No real change here, right? He is what he is. He hits the ball. He makes a lot of contact. He plays good defense. He runs really well. And it's just a matter of how much power you expect him to grow into. Only cool thing here, he came on the mound to get the last out with the bases loaded in the game against Rogers. So, you know, neat little trick. Obviously not something he's going to do as a professional, most certainly.
Well, how do you know that?
Because he's 5'8". You know, look, I think it'd be really cool. We'd love to.
You
like,
imagine.
If this is the dude to pull off being a two-way player or hitting Ken's ideal of like a reliever of a position player who comes in as reliever, I will be shocked. It'd be fun as hell, but I don't. The strange thing is he pitches and the only knock on his defense is that his arm isn't great. So
it's probably some type of deception stuff that he could.
I feel like you could add arm strength over time. So that doesn't really concern me. It's just the power potential that's, you know, the limiting factor here. Okay, who wants to go next?
I could go next because mine's really short.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah, because the only, like, Caminiti didn't pitch this week. He just hit, and he got, like, three hits. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And Kalen Culpepper had a really strong week. In a series against... Sorry, it reloaded by accident, so like I got to pull it back up, which, of course, because I wanted to go first. In a series against TCU, he had six hits in three games, a home run, a double, and drove in six. And I think it was a big scouting week. Like, there was a lot of scouts down there. So, because I saw a few of the draft people tweeting about him. And yeah, he looked good. Bat speed looks good. He played a good shortstop. He hit for power this week, which is nice to see, or this weekend, because it was really only a few games. But yeah, he had a very strong week when I think. It was a very opportune time for him. There was a lot of eyeballs down there, and he played well. So good for him.
Nice.
So it was an easy week for me, but a strong week for him.
Might have moved himself up 10 or 15 spots with just one good weekend. We love the draft. It's totally an absolutely rational and reasonable process throughout the evaluation.
Every time.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ken, you have the fun one. Especially given some of the news this week. So let's hear it.
So since I wasn't around last week, we'll do the last 2 weeks. And Bench has kind of dominated. He went 11 for 36, hit five home runs, walked five times, and struck out 10. So during the last 2 weeks, he's hitting 306, 381, 806. That's an 1187 OPS, and his K percentage has ticked up a little bit, striking out almost a quarter of his plate appearances in the last 2 weeks, but he's also walking about 12%. On the season now, he is up to 318, 436, 631. That's a 1067 OPS, and he is still walking more than he's striking out. He's walking about 17.75% and striking out just under 17%. So
that'll work.
About as good as you could reasonably hope for. Now, I will say a lot of the homers came against BYU. They're kind of new to the Big 12?
Don't ask me these questions.
Sure, that's something in theory I should know, but I don't. I know they're relatively new to the conference. Big program, but maybe on the lower end of the competition.
It's a move up
still,
for them, yeah. It's a move
still,
up for them.
He did hit five home runs in a week, essentially, from the 23rd to the 26th. On the mound, he got in three games, and the last of which he started. So in total, he threw seven innings, gave up eight hits, three earned runs, four walks, nine strikeouts, one homer and two doubles. And That brings his ERA to the week to 3.86. His strikeouts per nine, 11.5 or so. His walks per nine, a little over 5. And on the season, everything looks a little prettier because his one start, you know, is basically where all the damage was done against him. Mm-hmm. On the season, he's got a 2.84 ERA, 11.84 strikeouts per nine, just under 3 walks per nine. In how many innings? 19 innings. So also pretty good in the aggregate, but as one would think, you know, him being an everyday player and also used to pitching in short bursts when they tried to stretch him out, you know, it didn't go quite as well.
I wonder why they did that. I wonder if someone got tweet something and they just needed an arm or what the motivation was there.
The broadcast was very, I watched the first two innings and the broadcast was also very confused about it. So they thought it wasn't like ideal given that he's probably going to be, they're going to have a right fielder with a sore arm for a few days.
Yeah, no kidding.
But he did it and they did win the game. So
it's all that we play to win the game. We should note that in Baseball America's second mock draft, they had Benj, I think is.
Okay. No idea. Benj is how I'm going with it.
Let's go with Benj.
That's not informed.
Benj going 19th overall to the Mets. You know, you never know what's going to happen on draft day. Crazy things can happen. But of the like possible outcomes at this spot, I think this would be one of the best ones.
Frankly. That'd be very good value for that part of the draft. You get a mostly finished college hitter, no real weak point in his offensive game.
Yeah. And I was talking to Jarrett and Ben over at Baseball Prospectus, and they basically had Benj as the last player in their third tier, which ended at 18. So you're basically hoping that someone reaches in front of the Mets and some guys in that third tier drop down. I think this would be a really excellent pickup if they can pull this off.
Agreed. My other player, Drew Beam, he threw two games, one of which went pretty well, the other one not quite as well. He started one game on the 20th against Kentucky. He went 4 1/3 innings, gave up 7 hits, 4 runs, 3 of which earned, walked 2, struck out 4. And his second start of the last kind of 2 weeks was on the 26th against Missouri. He went 7 1/3, gave up 6 hits, 2 earned runs, walked 1, and struck out 8. So on the season, he is up to a 3.29 ERA. His strikeouts per nine is steadily creeping up. He's at 8.14. And his walks per nine still well under 2 at 1.86. So more of the same, not really striking out as many guys as you'd like for you know, a polished college pitcher, but also impeccable control and you know, managing to keep runs off the board. I still think he makes more sense in like the second round.
Yeah. BA had him
going good value there.
BA had him going 29th overall to the D-backs, which feels a little high to me. But I could also see the D-backs doing that. They like this sort of polished college starter. Whether that's the right guy to pick at 29, I don't know. But, you know, it lines up with there's a vision. I could see the vision.
There's good things there. You know, mm-hmm. He's got control down. He's got a hard to teach secondary. If you're a team that's good at, you know, developing sweepers, or you think you can give him a hard cutter, suddenly it starts to make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
because he has a lot
which
of
honestly might be the Mets now.
Yeah,
which honestly might be the Mets now. So,
I like the soft skills he has. He has good command, even if he's a little hittable. You know, the command and some of the secondary stuff is encouraging. So.
Just to run through some of the other names, because I didn't do this as we were going. In the BA mock, Kalen Culpepper went 18th overall to the Rays. That fit doesn't make a ton of sense to me, I'll admit.
No.
I don't buy that. The Dodgers selected Slade Caldwell at 23 overall. I could kind of see that given that they took Kendall George with their first pick last year. So that could be possible. And then Cam Caminiti went to The Padres, which is extremely Epler, like, or not Epler, Preller, like that makes Preller. A ton of sense. Yeah, absolutely. I could absolutely see that happening. And the only one of our six guys who isn't here is Michael Massey, which, yeah, makes sense. Not my finest work there. Okay, so that's our draft update. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and go through the happenings in the Mets minors this week. And we're back. I realized that I've not been going through the records for the week in the way Steve used to. So I'm going to start doing that. Syracuse went 4-2 this week. They're playing Columbia. That's the Guardians affiliate. Binghamton also went 4-2. They were against New Hampshire. That's the Blue Jays AA affiliate. Brooklyn also 4-2. They were playing Wilmington, which is the Brewers High A affiliate. And St. Lucie, they're 2-3. They're currently, when I wrote this, they were winning. I believe they're now tied at 2 against Daytona, which is the Reds A-ball affiliate. A number of notable things to talk about this week. Let's start with the quick ones. Nate Lavender, unfortunately, has gone down with Tommy John. That sucks.
Real bummer.
Yeah. And really, it's literally right as they call up a left-handed, like, the timing for that for him is so awful.
Fucking brutal.
I really think this is part. This should come into the calculus when you're making end of season roster decisions, especially with pitchers. And obviously, like, you're not gonna forfeit the chance to manipulate, might be too strong a word, but optimize the promotion timeline for a top tier arm just for a feel good moment. But when you're talking about middle relievers, like, what are you scraping and clawing for? I think it would have been nice to say, you're healthy, you've been good, let's give you a shot at the major leagues, because who knows if he ever comes back from this. And that's lame as hell, honestly. That's actually the only bit of bad news to go through, so that's good. Both David Peterson and Tyler McGill are on the mend. They both tossed 2 innings for St. Lucie. McGill struck out 6. Peterson struck out 5. The rehab clock is 30 days. So at most, the Mets have till May 28th to either activate or option these guys. And I had this up and I closed it. I don't know which of them has options still. They both still have options. McGill still has 2 options. Peterson still has 1. So the Mets have 30 days to either add them to the Major League roster or option them to Syracuse. We can talk about where they land in a second, because I think that folds in nicely to another guy we should talk about, and that's Christian Scott. He had a start earlier this week, struck out 8 in 6 1/3 innings, walked 1. He gave up a homer. It was to Kyle Manzardo, who's really fucking good. So, you know, it's fine.
He loves giving up home runs, though. Jesus.
Yeah, he's got a bit of a look. That's the one weakness here, and it's going to be the weakness with this fastball heavy profile. To his credit, he did not have his best stuff today. He made his quote-unquote worst start of the season, and he still went 4 1/3, only gave up 1 run, despite only striking out 2. So this was originally – the question I had written down for us to discuss here was originally, is it time for Christian Scott to join the Major League rotation, like, in the next turn and replace Adrian Hauser? And I think we can broaden that question to include McGill and Peterson here. Like, what's the short-term what do you think the short-term evolution of the Mets rotation is with all these guys coming back or knocking on the door?
Probably a 6-man rotation. From now, so May starts. So actually, we could do it from now, from tomorrow. So we record on Sunday, so tomorrow would be Monday against the Cubs, for those of you, like, just to see where I'm coming from. They have 2 off days until they leave for London, which is in early June. The last day before that is June 5th. Mm-hmm. That's not with the way that this rotation has gone, with how they 5-and-dive basically everyone, because of that's how it kind of works. I think they kind of have to do a 6-man rotation. Senga might come back during that time, and you might want to ease him back in with a 6-man rotation. So I just think that makes sense with the amount of guys they have coming back. I don't know if that means you cut you get Hauser out of it and you put a Peterson in there. I don't know if that means you just stick a Scott in there and you say whatever to Peterson and McGill, but I think they need to
shift to a six-man rotation in May. Just having two off days in that entire month is so tough for the rotation. I think that's the best way to keep everyone upright.
I can buy that. I frankly think Hauser has been rough. Like, Hauser's been real rough and might just be bad at this point. It's not a huge sample, and maybe there's something you could tweak, but you're talking May as a timeline. Short term, do you kick Hauser out of the rotation on Thursday for Scott?
Well, Scott pitched today.
Today.
So.
Ah, shit.
Monday, Tuesday. Fuck. That's short.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think that's the plan. I think Hauser's going to make his next start. So maybe the next turn after that, but then at that point is Peterson or McGill back. But I don't know. And I think that maybe I could see them doing a six-man with Peterson as the sixth guy, and McGill kind of gets the short end of the stick here.
Mm-hmm.
We also haven't seen Peterson with the newer Mets pitching staff, including like Yeagers, and maybe they have some idea with how to make him a little bit better, because people have been saying for a while I could see him going to a smarter team and optimizing him. The Mets are now that. So especially on the pitching side. So I wonder if they want to see that first and they don't want to burn Scott. Also, Scott is giving up home runs like crazy in AAA, even though he's pitching well outside of that. The home runs are still an issue. I'm a little worried if he comes up, he just gets home runs to death by like the Braves or something, or the Phillies, because that's who
do you know,
the
roughly,
Braves and the Phillies. And
do you know roughly how the ball is carrying in AAA this year?
Because I think
I'm looking at his fan graphs.
Heavy.
Like, he's basically almost a third of his fly balls are leaving the yard.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's likely to continue quite as bad, but yeah, you know.
No, I mean, if it does, then we have other problems. If
right.
you're taking up home runs to that degree, that's an issue. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they just think, hey, we have enough major league guys that we don't need to rush him.
Yeah, don't need to start it.
Like, we don't need to get him up here now.
I could see them wanting to get him closer to like 10 starts in AAA.
Yeah.
So I think to your point, Ken, the ball is still flying pretty well in AAA. The other element is they have one of the weird strike zone modifications. I forget exactly what system they're testing there, but it essentially is making the zone a little shorter and a little wider.
Yeah.
Scott's obviously a guy whose fastball plays best up in the zone, and I think with the AAA zone, he's maybe having to throw it a little bit lower than is optimal. Whereas in the majors, he's going to be able to throw it, you know, at guys' chests. And so both a 33% home run to fly ball ratio is not sustainable. And I also think there's going to be some inherent differences in the majors that will tune that down a little bit.
And also some stadiums are just bigger in the majors. Like, I've seen a few of his home runs in AAA, like home runs that he surrendered in AAA, and it's like a bandbox Little League ass.
Oh, the two he gave up in.
I think it's the Charlotte.
Yeah.
I think against the White Sox affiliate was like, those were nonsense, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and they count the same on the box score, but when you're actually seeing it, that's like a fly out, I think, to left field in both of those cases. The Danny Mendick one in particular, I was like, man, that's kind of nonsense.
Every Danny Mendick homer. I think I'm willing to be a little bit more aggressive than you guys here. Like, I would get him in the rotation this upcoming turn. I don't know exactly how that works, but I think it's worth. I don't think there's much left that's actually challenging him in AAA, and I'm generally willing to push pitchers faster than I am hitters. And just in terms of how this would shake out, and knock on wood that everyone stays healthy, as we all know, that's not going to be the case, but let's pretend it is for a moment. Like, I think ideally, in a couple of weeks, you'd have a six-man rotation where Scott and Peterson are in the rotation. Hauser has been kicked to the bullpen. Daniel Nunez is off the roster. And maybe McGill is also in the bullpen. And I don't know, maybe that's Sean Reed Foley off the roster. You also need to get rid of one more dude, and it's probably just Danny Young at that point.
Danny Young feels like he's going to be an up and down.
Yeah.
Like, I could see him pitching sometime against the Cubs and then getting sent back down before even Tampa, before they go to Tampa.
It's, again, somebody will probably tweak something before we get to this point, but it's odd to have this excess pile of arms. Senga also seems to be progressing as well as could be expected, given his injury.
He's going to face hitters, right?
Yeah. That's true. I mean, that's going to throw another wrinkle into this. So maybe you don't want to call Scott up just to send him back down, and that's the logic here. I don't know. I think to make a full decision on this, we'd need the, you know, to have the deeper medical picture on Peterson, Senga, and McGill, and know what those timelines look like exactly.
I kind of don't see a path for McGill to be in the rotation. I don't really know how you get him back in without an injury.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would probably put Peterson in the rotation before him. But also, I think McGill has more of a chance to be an impact reliever than, because, like, as much as it's easy to say, like, oh, just make Peterson a left-handed reliever, like, that did not work when they tried it. And I understand that it's a different coaching staff now, kind of, but also.
I also just straight up think Peterson is better. I think Peterson's a better pitcher. Sure.
So I think I agree too. I mean, Peterson has more major league success already, but with Peterson, it just didn't look like he felt comfortable pitching out of the bullpen. Mm-hmm. Which, if a guy just doesn't feel comfortable with his stuff warming up and doing all that, then what are you supposed to do? You can't force him to get comfortable.
Right.
It's unfortunate, but it's not a video game, like, it's real life, you know.
So I feel like the conclusion of this is that we have no idea what exactly is going to happen.
Because I think there's multiple – it's hard because I think there's multiple answers, and the right one is going to feel like – I don't know if they're going to choose the right one, basically, because I don't know what the right answer is, because you could go – they're like eight people deep almost, and that's not with Vassell and Hamill and guy – well, Vassell's getting lit up in AAA, but with Hamill and other guys like that, like, I don't really know. It's going to take injuries to make everyone pitch, so.
Let's touch on Hamill real quick here, because there's no question that Scott's the superior prospect and you want to prioritize his development. Is there an argument that Hauser has been bad enough to temporarily kick him to give a look at Hamill? Because – I mean, Hamill earlier this week, another 5 1/3 inning start with 8 strikeouts, only 2 walks and 1 hit. And if you exclude, so he had his first start was fucking awful. He walked 7. I forget how many runs he gave up. I believe the weather in Syracuse was just one of those miserable early April Syracuse days that really you can throw out. If you ignore
and
that.
And it's also, like you said, the strike zone. Like, he might not have been used to you like pitching with the automated strike zone.
In his other 3 starts, he's got a 2.5 ERA, 24 strikeouts to 5 walks, a 3.3 FIP, going, like, I think that's over 20-ish innings or something like that. I didn't write it down. I think we'd all agree that we're more comfortable pushing Hamill up and down a few times, whereas Scott we want to bring up and stick. Is there an argument to call Hamill up and bump Hauser this coming week? Because I think Hauser's been bad enough, you have to think about doing it.
Maybe, but also then I think we're getting to the point where, is it too early to give up on an established major league pitcher because of, like, 4 bad outings?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's also a line to draw there where guys pitchers slump too. Like, hitters aren't the only people who slump in baseball.
Sure.
And I think pitchers slump. I think it's more likely that a pitcher slump is just them getting worse than slumping because it's throwing a baseball. But also, shit happens. Like, Hauser has been a cromulent 4th-5th starter for years, so it's hard for me to. I worry that we might give up too early on him in a way. So I think there's a fine line to toe, and I don't know. I could also see if he's bad for 2 more starts and you're just like, fuck it, we can't do this anymore. Because at that point, we're starting to get into the middle of the season, and that's when we're really starting to talk about what they look like at the deadline and if they need another starter. Like, that's another part of the conversation where if you don't know what you have in Scott and Hamill and even Peterson, then you don't know if you need to trade for a starter at the deadline if they're in it, because they might need to trade for a third baseman because Beatty isn't hitting. And Like, it's just
Mark Vientos, baby.
There's a lot of moving parts with the roster because they're like a transitional contender. They're a wild card contender, not a World mm-hmm. Series contender. So it's just mm-hmm. a worse roster than other people. So I don't know. It's hard. I think I probably give Hauser one or two more turns mm-hmm. because defaulting to the veteran, and that doesn't cost you anything except, I mean, a game. But if he keeps costing you games, you got to think about it soon. Like this month, this month is like the last time he could really mess around.
Yeah, the rope needs to be getting short. He's been really, really awful.
Yes.
Yeah.
The rope right now is
starting to tighten up.
He's walked two more hitters than he struck out.
Yeah, it's not good.
That's not good. Again, little to pick. I mean, the one thing you could say is he's keeping the ball in the yard, but you know.
Does it matter if he's giving up seven runs anyway?
Just like, hitting the piss out of it, you know, in the park, and he's walking 6/9. So I would keep a fairly short leash on him from here on out. Can always move him back to the rotation.
Let me look something up quickly that if I was a better host, I would have done before now and not do it on the fly. Come on, Fangraphs. You can do it. Come on. Maybe it can't do it. Fangraphs is usually pretty reliable for this sort of thing, and it's failing me in my moment of need. Come on. All right, here we go. Perfect. All right, so Adrian Hauser, I'm just looking at his quick stuff plus metrics, which is flawed, but you know, quick and easy. He's got a 95, so he's 5% below league average. And if I go to 2023, I'm just trying to see if there's been a real notable fall off here. Fangraphs is again struggling to load this data. He's got 95 stuff plus, 98 location plus, 95 pitching plus overall. Let's see what he was in 2023. That's actually, I mean, his stuff is apparently better this year than last.
That's funny.
His control was better last year and his overall pitching plus was better, but you know, it's pretty marginal. I don't know. I'd have to look at I've not done a deep dive into Adrian Hauser to figure out exactly what's going wrong here, but maybe that has to be part of this conversation about, is this just an unlucky run where he faced the Dodgers and the Cardinals have some guys and whoever else, or is he actually just trash now? So, okay. That was a pretty deep dive here into the upper portions of the minors. There were a couple other, let's sort of like walk things down here. First of all, I got to give a shout out to, you know, my personal cheese ball here. Matt Rudick is back, baby. So Rudick, obviously really good first half last year, then had an injury. Turns out it was a shoulder thing that he tried to come back from and didn't appear in spring training at all. And then coming into this week, he looked shot. He was batting 147, 293, 206, slugging 206, striking out almost 35% of the time. And this was with the 250 BABIP. So he was getting maybe a little unlucky, but he was awful. This week he hit 412, 500, 862 with two homers, 10% strikeout rate, 15% walk rate. It sure as hell looks like he's back to what he was doing last year. I mean, already his line on the season is back to 30% above league average, with elevated strikeouts, but with a BABIP that isn't extreme. And, you know, if the strikeouts continue to fall back, I think he actually struck out twice today, so he's not helping my argument. But really nice week that gives me some hope here. Are they really thinking they should put him in Syracuse? Because who the hell is actually in the Syracuse outfield aside from Ben Gamel? Like...
So you could make the point that he's an injury away from being the Mets fifth outfielder, right? Like with Gilbert hurt,
mm-hmm.
you could call him Ben Gamel, I guess, but
I feel like Gamel would get the first shot at it. But yeah, I think he should be in that conversation. I mean, if he has a couple more weeks like this, his line's going to look exactly like it did last year. I'm pretty confused why he's still in Binghamton, frankly. Like I don't get it. Yeah, I mean, look, this guy isn't going to be a star. This might just be a hot week. I don't actually have the exit velocity data to back up the idea that his shoulder isn't fucked still. But fundamentally, I think if the shoulder's healthy, this is a real dude to keep an eye on still. So fingers crossed on that front. Moving to two more interesting prospects, let's talk about Ryan Clifford first, because I think his line on the season is just bonkers right now.
It's hilarious, yeah.
So one of my bold predictions was that he would hit 30 dingers, and frankly, that's not going to happen because he only has one so far. But he's walking 25% of the time. Granted, he is striking out 30% of the time, 22 walks and 24 strikeouts. But if you look, if you take out the first week of the season, and we're playing with arbitrary endpoints here a lot, he's got more walks than strikeouts since then. The power is missing, obviously. But given that the approach still looks good, I'm wondering if there's an argument to just get him the hell out of Brooklyn and see if this carries over to Binghamton. Because it really feels like that part is screwing him over right now.
I mean, yeah, hitting there sucks. Hitting there sucks for anyone. And it sucks for lefties even more. But I don't know. I was a little worried about him because of the strikeouts and the – I know not to batting average post, but, like, he's hitting, like, 240 or 230. Mm-hmm. Like, I would like to see more actual bat-to-ball contact from him. But, I mean, I don't know. I think it's one of those things where he needs to not be in Brooklyn anymore. It's just
– Who else is in Brooklyn's lineup right now?
Stanley Kinsella for some reason,
and Nolan McLean. The Brooklyn lineup is the Brooklyn
he's
lineup.
He's walking
sucks.
An like, awful lot. I would imagine a lot of it's he's just getting nothing.
Just getting pitched around. Yeah.
Yeah. Looking at his past week, he's got 2-3 walk games and a 4 walk game. I'm imagining he just isn't getting anything.
There was a game he went like, I think I might have recapped it actually. It was either 0 for 1 or 0 for 0 with like 4 walks. And I was like, okay, well, what are you supposed to even do with that? Because well, like it's good plate discipline.
I think that's the point though, right? Like he's, again, if he was striking out a million times and not walking, I'd be like, okay, you need to learn this strike zone. You need to learn this quality of stuff. You need to improve your approach. I don't think he needs that. He seems to have a good idea of what he's doing up at the plate. He's not swinging at bad pitches. Maybe there's too much in zone whiff, but I really wonder if the environment is conducive to making those improvements given, you know, Ken, I think you made a really great point. He's getting pitched around and Brooklyn is just such a miserable place to hit. Like I think that
it's been bad weather in Brooklyn too. Like this month it has not been a warm like April really. There's been a few stretches of warm weather, but for the most part it's been kind of windy and smarchy, you know, so it's not like and out in Coney Island it's colder than like where I am in Brooklyn or where most other people are in Brooklyn because of the weather, because of the water, I mean, and the wind, it's so nasty over there all the time, especially when you're playing at night. So those are also things that are you can't quantify that it's 50 degrees and windy at game time and he's facing in a and he's sitting in a bat and looking at a batter's eye that's like he sees amusement park rides in his eyes sight. Like it sucks that I think they might need to just move him off so we could talk about him in a different way. But
he also can't really say he's been not performing
bad.
He's been 50% above league average, so what I would take away from this is, he's probably not getting anything to hit. He might be pressing a little bit. That's why the strikeouts are a little higher than you'd think.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, that's what I think. I think it's time to get him out of Brooklyn. You could justify it partially based on, you know, the elevated, line compared to the league average. Even if it doesn't look nice. You know, he's getting on base almost half of his plate appearances. You can justify it in performance there. And, again, I think that he needs to be away from the boardwalk there.
Yep.
So,
really going to be interesting to monitor him. I'd also love to see his exit velo numbers, which I also don't have. I should message some people and try to get those. But I think there's a real argument to just get him the hell out of there.
And then, if he's 50 above points above league average at this point, it might be on merit also to get him out of there.
Like, yeah, you don't need – it doesn't need to realign into, like, a normal distribution. He's doing something extremely well, and unless you're seeing something under the hood that would give you pause.
Look,
I don't think there's any. You can always send him up and send him back down. I know you try to avoid that, but
if the data suggests really that he's like, if he's swinging and missing at anything that's above 92 or something, then yeah, maybe don't promote him. But we don't have the data to make that call.
But yeah, and if that is the case, then it doesn't really matter anyway, because he's going to have to hit above 92.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Basically, just like, what are the level appropriate challenges here, and is he meeting them? Right. And if that's the case, then push him up and hope he gets more to swing at and actually improve on. Okay. The last guy we want to touch on here is Jonah Tong yet again, because he's still been really excellent. Steve, our beloved Steve, did a deep dive into some of the stuff here. You know, it's a lot of what we've talked about already. Steve goes into it in really nice detail, but talking about the over-the-top delivery, it's worth noting he's bled a little bit of velocity as the season has gone on. He's back to sitting, you know, 92, 93. He still has 21 inches of IVB and he's blown it by guys, but, you know, it's not like he's sitting upper 90s or anything now. His strikeout rate is still almost 2 per inning, which is just fucking disgusting. You know, the guys aren't handling the slider, the curveball at all. The changeup exists. Here's the question I want to get to, though. Like, why is this dude still in St. Lucie?
I don't know.
I don't get it.
I'm a little, maybe not worried, but maybe Stearns is a cautious GM when it comes to this stuff. I don't know. I did not watch enough Brewers minor league baseball to know how quickly he promotes people, but if he's going to do stuff like this, he might just be cautious and slow play this stuff. So we'll see. But
it wouldn't surprise me if there's like a lot of these obvious promotions like right after the month changes over.
Yeah, that too.
That's fair. Yeah. We're going to find a way to get that. I don't know if we're going to include it in the show notes or have Steve post it as a separate article. But yeah, really, really nice breakdown of the stuff here. It's exciting. It's an exciting profile. There was a tweet going around today. I don't know if you guys saw this.
Oh, yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
I don't even know who it was. I'm not trying to start a Twitter fight or anyone, but someone on Twitter was saying that Jonah Tong is the fourth best pitching prospect in baseball. I read the tweet originally. I'm like, oh, in the system. Yeah, I'm sure I'm there. That might even be a bit light. He might be the third best prospect in the system, pitching prospect in the system. And then I reread it, and it's in baseball. No, sorry. Like, this is a nice little breakout. He's headed towards probably a top 100 rating, I think.
I would say he's like back, like fighting for a top back end of the top 100 spot right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, to be clear, that's a really nice developmental. That's great work by the Mets to turn him into that. He's like,
oh yeah,
three to four miles an hour short on his fastball to immediately run him up that high. Like, come on now. Let's not be delusional. This is a really nice prospect. This is really good, positive sign for the Mets system. He is not the fourth best pitching prospect in baseball, people. Just calm down. It's okay. It's all going to be fine. I don't know if you guys have anything else to add to Tong at this point. He's still really good, and we need to see him challenged at a higher level before, you know, there's anything else we can really glean from it, I think.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was everything we wanted to get through this week. As always, you can listen to or subscribe to all of our Home Run Applesauce podcasts through, as I throw a baseball across the room, through Apple Podcasts. We also encourage, rolling a ball around. I just threw it completely off my desk and scared. Penny is now glaring at me for disturbing her sleep. Sorry, Penny. I didn't, you can go, I'm sure you'll survive after missing 2 minutes of sleep. It'll be okay. Anyway, you could do all those things I was talking about on Apple Podcast or wherever else you get your podcasts. We also encourage you to rate and review. It helps people find the show, makes us feel like we're offering something useful here. You can also visit our Patreon for bonus episodes. That helps directly support the podcasters across the network. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. We did have a couple great scam emails this week, so thank you to those people, I suppose. You can also follow us on Twitter and reach us there. Steve is at Steve Sipa. I am at ElvaHost343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetsSZN. Until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets.